Did you know that Aragorn had a ring? Not a ring of power per se, but definitely a ring of great importance. Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel we cover Tolkien's Legendarium in full, as well as other great fantasy books and TV shows, like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. When we think of members of the Fellowship as ring-bearers, we obviously think of Frodo and Sam, who was the bearer of the One Ring for a short, if crucial, time in Mordor. There's also Gandalf, who bore Naya, the Ring of Fire, one of the three Elven Rings. But Aragorn also wore upon his hand for some time an Elven Ring, one far older than any of the Rings of Power, far older even than the earlier essays in the craft that Celebrimbor and his smiths had devised in Eregion. In fact, throughout the Third Age, it was probably the single oldest object possessed by the race of men. It predated the Isle of Numenor. It predated the awakening of the First Men. It even predated the sun and moon themselves. But it was not merely old. Throughout time, it played a pivotal part in the lives of Aragorn, his ancestors, and their ages-long war against Sauron. Aragorn's ring was wrought by Noldor smiths in Valinor, sometime between the birth of Finarfin and the exile. According to the Silmarillion, this ring was like to twin serpents whose eyes were emeralds and their heads met beneath a crown of golden flowers, that the one upheld and the other devoured. That was the badge of Finarfin and his house. Finarfin was the youngest son of the Noldor king Finwë, of which Finarfin's house became a cadet branch. This sigil, twin snakes and a crown of flowers, was to them what the direwolf was to the Starks or the lion to the Lannisters in Game of Thrones, say. We're not told exactly who crafted it, though it probably wasn't Fëanor, the greatest elven smith, as there was no love lost between him and his half-brother Finarfin. Regardless, it seems that Finarfin designed the twin snake's sigil personally, and at some point he passed it to his eldest son Finrod. When the Noldor elves left Valinor for exile in Middle-earth, Finrod went with them, but his father Finarfin stayed behind. Finrod took the ring, presumably as a symbol of his status, the heir of House Finarfin and its senior member in Middle-earth. It quickly became synonymous with him. After Finrod founded the underground kingdom of Nogothrond, he received the name Felagund, Hewer of Caves, and in turn his ring became known as the Ring of Felagund. And so it was until the year 455 of the First Age, when Morgoth finally broke the siege of Angband. The elves had been loosely besieging the fortress for centuries, and finally Morgoth had broken free. The fighting in that battle, which became known as the Dagor Bregalach, the Battle of Sudden Flame, was fierce, and the House of Finarfin were at the centre of it, taking huge losses. Finrod had raced up from Nargothrond to help with only a small company, but orcs cut off their advance and surrounded Finrod's forces on all sides. The day was saved by a human named Barahir, leading his bravest men, who cut through the orcs and formed a spear wall around Finrod and his troops. Together, the elves and men were able to make a strategic retreat south, albeit suffering heavy losses along the way. We read that thus Felagund escaped and returned to his deep fortress of Nargothrond, but he swore an oath of abiding friendship and aid in every need to Barahir and all his kin, and in token of his vow, he gave to Barahir his ring. It's clear that this is not a gift given lightly. As a relic of Valinor and a symbol of House Finarfin, it was precious, and Barahir didn't take it lightly, treasuring it. And so it became known as the Ring of Barahir. But this was a dark time for Beleriand, and soon almost the whole land was overrun by Morgoth's forces. Eventually, only Barahir and 12 of his men remained in their lands resisting, including Barahir's son Beren. What was once a mighty clan was reduced to a small band of outlaws. But despite being so few in number, they were so effective at harrying the enemy that Morgoth himself took notice of them and commanded his chief lieutenant, Sauron, to personally see to their destruction. Thus began, way back in the First Age, the special enmity between Sauron and the descendants of Barahir. This will play out much later with Aragorn. As was so often his modus operandi, Sauron set his enemies against one another, deceiving one of Barahir's companions into betraying the rest. Orcs snuck up upon Barahir and his band and slew them all. It was seemingly by chance that Beren had been sent out alone on a perilous mission far from their encampment, and thus he alone survived the onslaught. Upon finding his friends and father dead, Beren pursued the orcs responsible, who he found circled around a campfire, which he snuck up to and spied upon. We read that, "Then their captain made boast of his deeds, and he held up the hand of Barahir that he had cut off as a token for Sauron that their mission was fulfilled, and the ring of Felagund was on that hand. Then Beren sprang from behind a rock and slew the captain, and taking the hand and the ring, he escaped. And so the ring of Barahir came to Beren. For 4 years he kept up the guerrilla warfare against Morgoth's forces single-handedly in that region, before finally being driven into Doriath, which is where Beren met Luthien, and they fell in love. We need not tell that whole tale here, but the Ring of Barahir again played its role. When Beren first told Thingol that he wished to marry his daughter Luthien, Thingol would have killed him there and then, except that Beren held the ring aloft. All could see that it was Finrod Felagund's ring. Beren basically claimed Finrod's protection against Thingol's threats. Thingol setting Beren the task of getting a Silmaril from Morgoth's crown, a task that was meant to be impossible, was Thingol's way of getting around this. He couldn't kill Beren for the temerity of seeking his daughter's hand in marriage, but he could send him on a fool's mission that would surely lead to his death. Thingol, of course, refused to give Beren any aid in his quest, so Beren headed first to Nargothrond and to Finrod. The ring again kept him alive. The elven archers guarding Nargothrond's borders were on high alert and ready to shoot first and ask questions later, so as he travelled there, Beren, we're told, held ever aloft the ring of Felagund, and though he saw no living thing because of the stealth of the hunters, he felt that he was being watched, and cried often aloud, "I am Beren, son of Barahir, friend of Felagund. Take me to the king." Therefore the hunters slew him not, but assembling, they waylaid him and commanded him to halt. But seeing the ring, they bowed before him, though he was in evil plight, wild and wayworn. Finrod, of course, agreed to go with Beren. He had given his word to always come to the aid of Barahir's kin, but this was quite a tragic parting, for Finrod could see what would happen. If they failed the mission, they would die, but if they succeeded, the sons of Feanor would never cease to try to claim the Silmaril for themselves, bringing civil war to the elves. Indeed, we're told that Finrod had foreseen that his oath to Barahir would bring about his own doom. He had told Galadriel. And sure enough, this quest was to bring about his death. They were captured by Sauron and tortured. Eventually, Finrod died fighting a werewolf, sacrificing his own life to save Beren's. He stayed true to his oath until the end. In the end, Beren and Luthien did capture that Silmaril, and Thingol was forced to accept their marriage. And though the now famous ring is not mentioned much in the years that followed, it clearly passed from Beren to his son Deor, and then his daughter Elwing, and eventually to her son Elros, the twin brother of Elrond, and the first king of Numenor. After being the symbolic ring of the House of Finarfin, then Barahir's line, now it became an heirloom for the first few kings of Numenor. The fourth king, Tar-Elendil, however, bequeathed it to his daughter Silmarion, since she was the eldest child. It became an heirloom then of her house. Her son Valandil became the first lord of Andúnie, and it was possessed by every subsequent lord down to the last, someone we all know, Elendil, the father of Isildur. Through Isildur, it passed to the kings of the Northern Line in Arnor, and after that, Arthedain, yet another dynasty using this now millennia-old ring as a symbol of their house and rule. We next hear specifically about the ring in the year 1975 of the Third Age, after the Witch King of Angmar overthrew Arthedain, causing its last king, Arvedui, to flee north to Forochel, where he wintered with the Eskimo-like snowmen known as the Lossoth. Right before boarding the rescue boat that would soon send him to a watery grave, Arvedui paid the snowmen for their hospitality. The chief of the Lossoth tried to dissuade Arvedui from setting sail on the ice bay in mid-March. We read, but Arvedui did not take his counsel. He thanked him and at parting gave him his ring, saying, "This is a thing of worth beyond your reckoning, for its ancientry alone. It has no power, save the esteem in which those hold it who love my house. It will not help you, but if ever you are in need, my kin will ransom it with great store of all that you desire." It's good that Arvedui did give the ring to the Lossoth, for his ship sank with everyone and everything lost to the frozen seas. A tragedy, but the ring itself survived. And the Dúnedain did indeed ransom it back, most likely that same year or the very next. In the Tale of Years, the chronicle entry for 1976 states, "The heirlooms of Arnor are given into the keeping of Elrond." And the ring and the other heirlooms of the line of Isildur stayed with Elrond at Rivendell until the time of Aragorn. We read that by the age of 20, Aragorn had proved himself in Elrond's eyes. That day, therefore, Elrond called him by his true name and told him who he was and whose son, and he delivered to him the heirlooms of his house. "Here is the ring of Barahir," he said, "the token of our kinship from afar. And here are the shards of Narsil. With these you may do great deeds, for I foretell that the span of your life shall be greater than the measure of men, unless evil befalls you or you fail at the test. But the test will be long and hard. The scepter of Annúminas I withhold, for you have yet to earn it." If you're wondering, Elrond did give Aragorn the scepter when he was finally crowned king of the reunited kingdom, but the Ring of Barahir was Aragorn's by right of his birth, so Elrond gave it to him then. Elrond calls the Ring of Barahir a token of our kinship from afar, because Barahir was the great-great-grandfather of Elrond, and a slightly more distant ancestor of Aragorn with 30-something extra greats tacked on. And of course, the ring had once been worn by Elrond's own brother, Elros. The very next day, Aragorn was singing the Lay of Lathian, an epic narrative poem which speaks extensively about the Ring of Barahir in several places. For example, this time, when Beren and Finrod meet. "Twist not thy oaths, O elvish king, like faithless Morgoth. By this ring, the token of a lasting bond that Felagund of Nargothrond once swore in love to Barahir, who sheltered him with shield and spear and saved him from pursuing foe on northern battlefields long ago. Death canst thou give unearned to me, but names I will not take from thee. Of baseborn spy or Morgoth's thrall, are these the ways of Thingol's hall? Proud are the words, and all there turned to see the jewels green that burned in Beren's ring. These gnomes had set, as eyes of serpents twinned that met beneath a golden crown of flowers, the one upholds and one devours." The full lay, or song, recounts the tale of Beren and Lúthien, their love and their struggles against Sauron. An appropriate song for the occasion, as while Aragorn was singing it, he saw Arwen for the first time. Much like his forebear Beren, Aragorn called out upon seeing Arwen, "Tinúviel, Tinúviel," whose likeness Arwen admitted that she bore. And so these two descendants of Beren and Lúthien met in a manner which seemed to suggest history repeating itself. Perhaps their meeting would have played out similarly regardless, but it's likely that receiving the ring and learning of his heritage played no small part in Aragorn thinking to sing that song, or see so readily in Arwen a resemblance to Lúthien. Eventually, Aragorn gave that ring to Arwen to symbolise their betrothal. Tolkien's philosophy of history is displayed in the way in which elements from earlier eras closely correspond to counterparts in later ages, but nowhere in the Legendarium is such parallelism seen so clearly as in the lives of Beren and Lúthien and Aragorn and Arwen. Both couples were star-crossed lovers whose desire for marriage was met by unapproving fathers. Though Elrond's quest for Aragorn was much simpler than stealing a Silmaril, he merely forbade Arwen to marry any man who was not at least the king of both Arnor and Gondor. You can, in fact, argue that this was an apparently impossible task that Elrond thought Aragorn could and would achieve, contrasted to Thingol tasking Beren with something he thought he couldn't and wouldn't. Regardless, both couples played their part in fighting against Sauron and bringing about the downfall of the Dark Lord in their respective ages. Both couples' unions introduced an elvish strain of noble blood into mankind. And both ended bittersweetly, with the elf maid, each arguably the most beautiful in all the many millennia of elven history, choosing mortality, and thus leaving them with no possibility of being bodily reincarnated in the Undying Lands. From then until the end of Arda, Thingol and Elrond will live alongside nearly every elf ever, except for their only daughters. Throughout these two tales of triumph and tragedy, and all the long history that connects them before and after, the Ring of Barahir plays an unassumingly important role. And it is very like Tolkien that this ring, without which Middle-earth history would have been very, very different, is not, in and of itself, powerful or magical. Instead, it is symbolically important. It ties so much of the story together, symbolically embodying ties of love and affection between elves and humans, the children of Ilúvatar. Given as a gift of friendship from Finrod to Barahir, worn by Beren as he loved Lúthien, the first elf-human marriage, held by Elros the half-elven as he chose to live a mortal life as a king of humans, rescued from Numenor by Elendil the elf-friend, given by Aragorn the human king to Arwen his future elven wife. The ring does not symbolise power, like the other more famous One Ring of these stories and its linked rings of power. Instead, it represents love and honour and hope, persistence through the ages, self-sacrifice and the importance of family and friendship. It was given again and again through the years as a gift of love and thanks and care. The Ring of Barahir is not a magical ring. It is not a ring of power. Instead, it represents the things Tolkien thought were far more important than that. If you are wondering where my live streams have gone, they are now taking place, the same time every Thursday, on my second channel, IDG Live. You can find a lot of other new content on there as well. There's a link in the middle of your screen now. Or if you'd like to watch other videos about the world of The Lord of the Rings, there's a link to my playlist on the left of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.